Welcome to The Wild Photographer with Court Whalen. Simply put, I cannot overstate the importance of understanding the relationship between aperture and shutter speed. It doesn't matter if you've never considered this before. It doesn't matter if you're ever going to use this going forward. But getting an idea, even if you just hear this once, of that relationship is going to send your photography to the next level. I guarantee it. So I like to think of this relationship between aperture and shutter speed in a metaphorical sort of way. Let's imagine, you know, the amount of light that you need in a photo is pretty standard across the board. So let's make a metaphor to a faucet and filling up a bucket of water. That bucket of water is the amount of light you need. You need to fill that bucket in order for light to be in the photo, to see what you're trying to see, to portray what you're trying to portray. So you can fill up a bucket of water in a few different ways. You can turn a spigot on an absolute trickle and just dripping in the bucket, and therefore that spigot needs to be on for longer. You can kind of see where the metaphor is going here. That's a longer shutter speed. Or you can have a very, very fast flow of water, i.e. a very big aperture opening, but you don't need to have it on that long. You can just turn it on and off, and it's going to fill up that bucket in much faster time because a lot more water is pouring through a very fast, wide opening. So again, this is a total metaphor for the size of your aperture and the length it needs to be open. So a quick, short length of that faucet being on is going to be a fast shutter speed. It's going to very quick open and closed. If you don't have a lot of water flowing through that faucet, you need to have it on longer. So concomitantly, a very narrow aperture opening, you need to have a longer shutter speed. So there are pros and cons, pluses and minuses to both sides of the coin. It's not like one is better than the other, but there are a lot of considerations to make. Do you need a fast shutter speed for fast moving wildlife? Do you want a long exposure and therefore you need to dial in a very narrow aperture? There are a lot of ways we use this balance to our favor in photography. So let's get right into that part of it. That's the key part. Understanding it is certainly important, but how you use it is perhaps more important. Well, the first thing you have to know is we have inherent constraints with photography. You can't really have your cake and eat it too. You can't have, you know, this wide open aperture to let in a ton of light, but then also have a very, very wide depth of field. You can't have a long shutter speed opening to tons of light and have a big aperture for that narrow depth of field. So there's always this balance and this constraint. So usually we're prioritizing each and every photograph for one or the other. Now, you might be one of these folks that shoot on manual mode. You might dial in your aperture and shutter speed for every shot you take. A lot of folks out there like to focus on just one of the two and set it to either aperture priority mode or shutter speed priority mode. And this is really key. For a lot of my photography, I do set my camera to aperture priority mode because that's the thing I really need to control. Shutter speed tends to be just something I have to achieve. I have to get a fast enough shutter speed in order to take the shot. Usually I'm much more worried about what is the depth of field of my photo, and that's how aperture plays a huge, huge part. So the art of photography is really understanding this balance and when and how to prioritize one of these at the expense of the other. First off, how and when to prioritize aperture. Well, aperture priority mode is something, like I said, I do usually shoot on. Changing your depth of field is one of the core things that you really simply can't fix. You can't correct it in Photoshop. If the whole scene is in focus, yeah, you can kind of use a little paintbrush tool and blur out some of it. But if you have intentionally blurred the background and the foreground, and you only have a small slice of your frame in focus, you can't just make the rest of it in focus in Photoshop. It just doesn't work like that. So as a result, you really have to think about what you want in focus and how much in focus as you're taking each and every photograph. So essentially in aperture priority mode, you choose the aperture, you choose your depth of field, and the camera chooses the shutter speed for you. The drawback to this is that you must monitor your shutter speed. For most applications, shutter speed, the main limiting factor of shutter speed is simply just hand movement. If you're not shooting on tripods, which, you know, a lot of people do not shoot on tripods for all their shots, you need to shoot at a fast enough shutter speed so this the slight minute movement of your hand as you're taking the photo or as you're just sitting there balancing steadily, it doesn't jar the photo a little bit. Because if that photo jars even just a fraction of an inch, fraction of a millimeter, it's going to blur the entire shot and it's botched. It's really, really hard to recover from that. Now, there are, of course, applications where you intentionally want to blur things, but we'll get to that in just a bit. So one thing I do often when I'm on aperture priority mode and I'm letting the camera choose my shutter speed for me is I'm listening. I do have a DSLR, so I have a mirror, and when I hit that shutter button, the mirror flips up for a quick second, so it makes this noise. It's that shutter speed noise that gives the camera its classic sound. iPhones make this sound, and it's literally just a noise like a recording. Nothing's moving in the camera. Same thing with mirrorless cameras, but they still make that sound because it's very classic. More importantly, this sound is important for me because I've trained my ear to know when that shutter speed gets a little bit too slow. Again, most of the time, especially when we're shooting outdoors in full sun, shutter speed is so fast, fractions of a second, goes really, really fast. But I've trained my ear that when I'm starting to get into those slow shutter speeds, those challengingly slow shutter speeds where I know I'm not shooting fast enough, I can start to hear that chunk, chunk, chunk. And that noise tells me, oh, I better start looking at my aperture and figuring out, you know, how can I adjust this because my shutter speed is too slow. Now, you know, what is a slow shutter speed? Well, for handheld shots, generally what you want to think about is you want to shoot as fast or faster than 1/1 the focal length of the lens. Okay, so say you have a 50 millimeter lens on, you want to shoot at least 1/50th of a second to minimize hand motion or hand shake, as we call it. Now, this is not perfect because if you're moving or if you're not really stone cold still, there's still gonna be some movement to that. And we don't want that. We don't want any movement at all. So really, even 1/50 for a 50 millimeter is kind of slow. As a general rule of thumb, I try to shoot all my shots at 1/80th of a second or faster. Another consideration to make is image stabilization these days. So what we see in a lot of cameras now is either a 2, 3, or 4 stop image stabilizer. This is either in the camera body, in the case of a lot of mirrorless cameras, or it's in the lens, in the case of a lot of DSLR cameras. Let me tell you what that means. This is really cool. So what a 2, 3, or 4 stop image stabilization does is the idea is it minimizes or it compensates for your hand movement, just the small movements of your hand. So a 2 stop would mean that, okay, so we use that focal length rule. I have a 50 millimeter on, let's say it's image stabilized. By the basics, I should be shooting at 1/50th of a second. If I take that down 1 stop, that means a 1 stop stabilizer means I can shoot at 1/25th of a second, having that shutter speed. That's 1 stop. A 2 stop means I can have it again. A 3 stop means I can have that number again. And 4, one more time. So as you can see, very quickly, from a 50 millimeter lens or a 100 millimeter lens, we can be in the very low double digits or even single digits where we can basically shoot at 1/10th of a second in order to get that shot and essentially eliminate hand movement. That's really, really powerful, really important. Now, it has an even greater effect on the far end of the spectrum. We're talking about our 200s, 300s, 400s, 500 millimeter lenses. If you think about it, you know, a 500 millimeter, you've got to be shooting pretty fast to minimize any sort of a hand motion. By rule of thumb, it needs to be 1/500th of a second to compensate for 500 millimeters, right? 1/1 the focal length. A 2-stop image stabilization system would bring that down 1 stop to 250, so 1/250th of a second. 2 stops would be 1/125, and 3 stops would be like 1/60. So you can actually shoot at 1/60 with a 500 millimeter lens if you have good image stabilization. It's pretty cool, it's pretty next level, but this is all to say that shutter speed does need to be fast enough in order to compensate for any movement in your hand for each and every shot you shoot, essentially without a tripod. So that's a lot of shots, that's almost all the time. Okay, so when to shoot on big F numbers, or when to use that narrow pinhole aperture, when to shoot on small F numbers or that wide open aperture. There are different, very important applications for both. So the first, when do you want that big F number, which translates to that small aperture opening? Okay. Mostly it's gonna be landscapes. When you want the majority of your scene in focus deliberately, you want to use that big aperture number, or what we also call a small aperture. Remember, the terminology is quite confusing, but think big numbers means small opening, and not surprisingly, that translates into a longer shutter speed because you need to let in more light. So hence why a lot of photographers that are doing landscapes will use a tripod. It's not because it's fun lugging along a tripod. It's not because it's fun, you know, trying to find balance on unstable ground and, you know, carrying this thing around with you. But the main thing is that oftentimes people are shooting at big F numbers like F11, F16, sometimes even F22. And that creates a very, very small pinhole opening in the lens in which light enters. That means you have to leave those shutters open for a lot longer to capture the same scene because light is not flowing through that aperture very fast. It's a very small drip faucet if we go back to that earlier analogy. When do you want to use that small aperture number? When do you want to use it's a big aperture opening for shallow depths of field, right? So what we like that for is really any sort of portraiture work. When you want to isolate the subject, this could be a model, this could be your kids playing in the backyard, or it could be wildlife. You know, oftentimes wildlife that are in focus with a nice blurred background, it's really, really great technique. Part of that is because you want to minimize distractions in the background, and part of that is because you want to draw focus onto the subject. When the subject is nice and crisp and focused and the background's blurred, the subject looks even more in focus because of that comparison. Now, sometimes you have a forced small or big aperture. Let's talk about those next. So what about when you have a very forced small aperture number? That's a small f-stop f2.8, which translates into that wide opening. Usually that's because we're limited by light. And this is especially prominent with wildlife photography because we're usually up and about photographing in low light conditions. Daybreak or as the sun begins to go down for the day, a lot of big wildlife in Africa per se, they're active at dawn and dusk. These are not full light times of day. As a result, we've got to stack the deck in our favor for not having a slow shutter speed. How do we not do that? Well, we get a big faucet, we turn that water on full blast, and we try to turn it on for a very short amount of time because, again, we're limited by our own hand motion. Then when it comes to wildlife, we're limited by the wildlife movement. So image stabilization works great for minimizing handshake, you know, the movement you have with your hand or your body, whatever, but it's not going to stop the wildlife from moving. If that cheetah is running across the savannah at full speed, you've got to stop that motion very, very crisply. You got to freeze it with a very fast shutter speed. And check out my podcast on fast moving objects to get more on that. So sometimes we have a very forced big aperture number like F16 or F22, which translates to that narrow aperture opening. Sometimes we're forced into that. The most common example there is when we want to do long exposures in daylight. Usually for me, that's when I'm photographing water. I want to forcefully inject movement into the scene. But at daylight, you know, at a long exposure, there might be too much water in the bucket, you know, so to speak. So what we have to do is we don't want to overflow that bucket. We're still just trying to get right to the brim. So the way we compensate for a deliberately long exposure is we shoot at a very narrow aperture opening or big F number. Okay, so moving on to when and how to prioritize shutter speed. So shutter speed priority mode is a very useful mode. Sometimes it's denoted as an S on your camera's wheel, you know, your little settings wheel. Sometimes on Canons, it's TV for time value. Either way, it's usually pretty prominent on your camera's settings wheel. I'll be honest, I only use it about 5 to 10% of the time. I don't use it very often. Like I just said, I do use it for specific instances like when I'm shooting waterfalls and water where I'm gonna blur that motion. I have a shutter speed in mind, but most of the time, shutter speed is just a necessary thing. I need a fast enough shutter speed to freeze motion or to minimize my own body's and hands movement. But usually I'm really just trying to figure out, okay, do I want a narrow or a wide depth of field here? So again, 5 to 10% of the time, I'm on shutter speed priority mode. Usually shutter speed is not the creative element, but instead it's more of the necessary element to make the picture still a good picture. In other words, there's no real creative element to photographing at 1/300th of a second versus 1/200th of a second. It's just a need. You just need to shoot faster or as fast as you can to freeze movement. So in many cases, it's the extremes that I'm thinking about. Do I want a really, really fast shutter speed? Or do I want a really, really slow shutter speed? Or I'm just trying to work with what the camera gives me in response to my chosen aperture. So when to shoot fast and slow? Again, I've said this a million times. The first time you need to think about shutter speed and when you want to shoot fast enough is to minimize hand motion. Again, that's 1/1 the focal length of your lens. As you get into image stabilization, pay attention to the stop rating. So your camera or your lens will have a number of stops that it's supposed to stabilize your image. And that's what you want to go for. And you don't want to shoot anything slower than that or else you're going to get the whole scene blurred from your own individual movement. Other times you want to shoot fast, moving wildlife, people, pets. You know, you can't shoot too fast when you're trying to freeze motion. Generally, you're just limited by light. So yeah, it's great to shoot at 1/2000th of a second. And if you're in full daylight, you'll probably see some opportunities that you can do that. But really, we're often much more limited by light that we can't shoot that fast. Take a test shot. Take your camera and put in 1/2000th of a second. Most likely what's going to happen is your camera, your photo is going to be just way too dark. So when do we want to shoot slow? Well, generally, I like slow photography when I want to forcefully inject movement into a shot. This is a creative element. This is the artistic element. I was just doing a photo shoot for a local coffee company, and I'm taking slow shots of their roasting process because I want to take into account the movement of the beans throughout the roaster. And yeah, the shot's a little bit blurred. The edge of the machine is nice and crisp focused, but the beans are blurred. They're moving in a certain direction. So I'm forcefully injecting motion and movement into the shot, almost as if kind of like a bridge between photo and video, showing that, hey, there's something going on here. There is movement. Even though it's still just a still photo, the eye looks at that and makes up its own story of the movement behind it. So it's really important for a lot of the creative elements of photography. I also like to shoot slow for moving water, waterfalls, rivers, creeks, you name it. What that does is it gives water that nice flowing look in the photo. It's absolutely beautiful. It's a real, real pro technique. You can wow your friends. It's something you should definitely learn how to do. So when am I forced to shoot a fast shot? Well, that's usually when I want a very shallow depth of field. Okay, so sometimes we're forced to shoot fast and slow. We are forced to shoot fast when we are prioritizing our camera for a shallow depth of field. That shallow depth of field, again, is associated with a wide aperture opening. You're letting in a ton of light. So your camera has to shoot fast or else it lets too much light in. It overflows the bucket and you get whitewashed in your photo. The photo just turns out way too bright and you can't compensate. As a general rule of thumb, it is always better to lighten a dark photo than to darken a light photo in Photoshop. So when you blow out a photo, as we call it, when we whitewash it, it's kind of lost. There's nothing you can do to recover it, even in the most fancy Photoshop applications. So we're also forced to shoot slow time, and this is a much more common problem. It's usually not a big deal when we're forced to shoot fast. Again, it's only those rare instances when we're trying to inject motion with movement type photos, with waterfalls and running water. But forced to shoot slow is a much more common thing, and that's usually because we do have low light. I mentioned wildlife safaris are a classic time. Landscape photography, we're forced to shoot slow because of those big apertures and the wide depth of field. But really, anytime we have low light, shutter speed becomes an issue. So this is the time when we talk about the magical unicorn. We're talking about ISO. This is an interesting part. I'm not going to weave this into each one of the sections of this talk here because it's actually just sort of this. It is. It's a magic unicorn. It's the silver bullet. It's this interesting workaround to improve aperture and or improve shutter speed when you're limited by one or the other. So through a digital process and electricity, you're actually able to make the sensor more sensitive to light. That's the long and the short of it. It's very akin to ASA or film speed back in the day. You know, you're probably used to seeing 200 power film or 400, 800, that kind of thing. It's very, very similar with ISO, and it goes in those increments. Essentially, every time you double your ISO, you are able to shoot with twice as much of a shutter speed because you're letting in twice as much light. So let's just run an example here. So if you're shooting at 1/100th of a second and you say, gosh, you know, the motion's still blurred. Maybe you're shooting with a big beefy telephoto and there's still too much handshake, hand motion in the shot. And you say, I really want to go to 1/200th of a second. I want to double this. What you do is you go into your camera and you double your ISO. You go from 200 to 400. If you're already at 400, you go to 800. If you're already 800, 1600, and so on and so forth. So ISO is a great way to just magically, again, the magical unicorns riding in and permitting you to double your shutter speed. It's a really, really powerful thing specifically for wildlife photography. But it's also great for aperture too. So it has its effects in landscape photography. Imagine you're out before this beautiful mountain scene. You do not have your tripod. Oh no. And you want to get this shot and you know you want to get the meadow and the flowers and the mountain and the clouds in the distance all in focus. So you logically think, I want to shoot with a big aperture number. I want to shoot at f8 or f11. But, you know, as I narrow that opening to get that wider depth of field, remember you're turning that faucet down. So it's going to take longer to fill up that bucket. So you might be looking at 1/10th of a shutter speed. You know, test this out. Go into a dawn setting or a sunset setting and see what your camera gives you for shutter speed if you're on aperture priority mode and you dial in f8. It's going to be really, really slow. So let's say your camera gives you 1/20th of a second. Let's say you're shooting at a 24 millimeter lens. You know, you're like, oh, it's kind of close. I would feel much more comfortable by doubling my shutter speed into like the 1/40 range, 1/40th of a second. Boom, you go into your ISO, you go from 200 to 400, or again, 400 to 800, you double it, and you can double the amount of light, which allows you to shoot at a faster shutter speed. So again, there's this really intricate relationship between shutter speed and aperture, but then you inject this very interesting digital element, this electrical element of ISO to make your sensor more sensitive to light, and you have a lot more flexibility. So if you're thinking this is too good to be true, it kind of is. So there is a major drawback to increasing your ISO, not at the low levels, not when we're talking about 800 or less, but when you start getting those 1600, 3200, 6400, remember every unit is kind of doubling, we start to inject this terrible thing called noise or grain into our photos. And I'm not going to go into a lot of depth here. You probably already know what it looks like, but it's like someone just rubbed a bit of sandpaper over your photo. It's degrading the image. So remember, by and large, you want to shoot at the lowest ISO as possible, but it's a great tool when you're forced to shoot faster. You're forced to think about a bigger aperture. ISO can allow that flexibility, but you get into too high of a number and you start to get grain or noise. Every camera is different. The best way is to test it out. Everybody's eye is different. Your view of noise, your tolerance of grain is very subjective. So the best thing, the best piece of advice I can offer you is do some tests, figure out where you no longer think the photo is acceptable at a certain ISO on your camera, on your make and model, and try not to go above that, even if the conditions necessitate it. So going back to aperture and ISO, so what if you're at f5.6 and you're taking the shot, you know, you don't worry about shutter speed because it's already fast enough, but it's just at the fringe. You can't really slow it down anymore to let in more light, but you really want to double that aperture. You want to go one full stop up from f5.6 to f8. What do you do? Well, if you can't mess around with shutter speed because you're already close to your limit of how slow it is, and again, maybe you don't have a tripod, what you can do is you can double your ISO. So you can go from 200 to 400 or 400 to 800. And what that allows you to do, that's in essence injecting twice as much light. Therefore, you can take your aperture up one stop from f5.6 to f8, or another stop from f8 to f11 if you're already at f8. And you're essentially balancing it out. So doubling the ISO allows you to go up a stop and get a wider depth of field. Very, very important consideration. Everything we've been talking about so far is based on aperture priority mode or shutter speed priority mode. What that's doing is your camera is basically thinking and adjusting and giving you the reciprocal or the complement to aperture or shutter speed, meaning if you're telling it the aperture, your camera is choosing the shutter speed for you. If you're choosing the shutter speed, it's choosing the aperture for you. And it's doing that based on a neutral exposure setting, meaning it's at this whimsical value of zero, meaning it's right in the middle. It's shooting at the exact even level where there's just enough light and just enough dark in the scene. But the thing you have to realize is that cameras are tools, they're instruments, they're very advanced digital instruments, but nevertheless, your camera has to think about what neutral is. Your camera has to think how much light and dark is in the scene. Again, they're very advanced, but basically what most cameras use is this 18% gray rule. What that means is that your camera is actually analyzing every pixel, every scheme of light and dark in the scene, and it's trying to put together an exposure setting to give you about an average of 18% pure gray across the whole board. That is what camera programmers do to think that that's about pretty even across the board, the nice balance of lights and darks. So what that really means to you is that the camera doesn't always get it right. The camera doesn't always perfectly expose everything. So if you're on an aperture of f8 and your camera's giving you a shutter speed of 1/200, that 1/200 is being decided on by this digital instrument that's being programmed by people to say that you want 18% gray in your shot. Again, probably more often than not, that is right, or it's a good starting point, and the tweaks you can make are small adjustments that you can do in a post-processing program. But sometimes, particularly with wildlife shots or very challenging lighting schemes like sunsets or sunrises, it gets it way off. You know, it's either way too bright or way too dark. So with this whole sphere that I'm talking about today, this balance, this relationship of aperture and shutter speed, you have to realize that there's also the relationship between your camera's metering mode and how it chooses the reciprocal of what you choose. So if you are letting your camera choose shutter speed or aperture, you have to be ready to change your exposure compensations if you find the shots are too light and too dark. So this is kind of like the last thing I'm going to talk about, but make sure that before you go and test all this and experiment with it and do some trials in the field, know where your exposure compensation meter is. That's in your camera. It's somewhere in your settings, somewhere in your menu. Check out your camera's manual because you want to be able to change that if your camera just doesn't get it right each and every time with figuring out shutter speed or aperture essentially on your behalf. Okay, now the very final thing I'm going to talk about is kind of a new way forward on custom settings. And this is something I'm really excited about, really jazzed about. This is now my go-to method for photography. This is my go-to method for settings in the camera is I do shoot on manual mode now, but what I do is I actually have, you know, manual. So I choose the shutter speed and I choose the aperture, but I let the camera choose the ISO for me. And this has just been a game changer for my photography. Still though, not all cameras allow you to do this. It's a bit of cutting edge technology, but I do recommend if you are already shooting on aperture priority or shutter speed priority and you want to next level your game, see if you can do this ISO auto technique on your camera where you do dial in the needed shutter speed, you dial in the aperture that you view this scene needing, and then you let the camera choose the ISO. There is the risk the camera is going to choose a too high of ISO for you. The great thing is that on newer cameras, you can actually set a tolerance. You can say, okay, I want you to do auto ISO, but I don't want you to go above 3200 or 6400 or 12,000, whatever your personal tolerance is. So again, the great thing about this is that you can tell it the shutter speed because you don't want to ever go below that shutter speed or else you won't get the shot. And you still have creative control over your aperture. I think it's a win-win. So folks, I hope this was an informative and helpful episode to you. It's a complicated thing, but it's one of the most important things to understand in terms of photography. A lot of people just don't take the time to learn this or to get it in today's day and age because oftentimes you don't really have to think about this relationship as it pertains to modern cameras. Auto settings are great nowadays. You know, any sort of iPhone, smartphone photography is not taking this stuff into consideration. But I guarantee you, if you digest this, if you've learned it, if you practice it, you're going to see photography in a whole different light, pun intended, I suppose. You really are. You're going to understand the relationship better. You're going to know that every sort of reaction has a reaction on part of your camera. As you choose aperture, it's changing your shutter speed. Start to tinker with ISO. This is, again, that magical unicorn that comes into place. I told you my preferred technique, now letting my advanced camera choose the auto ISO for me. And man, I'm sitting pretty. I love this technique, and I think you will too. So once again, thanks for joining today. Be sure to keep an eye out for next time and ear out for next episode. Thank you.